Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, joins us for the weekly update here on this Friday, Erev Shabbos Chanukah. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Good morning.
So how was your Thanksgiving, Kah? Did you find it unbelievable that this term became so part of the vernacular in this country that the President of the United States used it in the opening part of his Chanukah message to the Jewish people in America?
It is quite remarkable, but it shows you the power of the Internet, the power of media, that a term that has no meaning can get such universal acceptance and people using it. And there are many who rightly point out the danger of this kind of machine, because it's no longer Thanksgiving, so does that mean that it's no longer the Ukka part? We have to remember it's for 8 days, and the significance are really not parallel. So this attempt to merge everything, you know, is reflective in those polls that come out where we blur all the differences. And again, I'm not putting down this,
right.
I know it was meant to be cute, but I think it takes on, you know, it's like Chrismukkah and things like that,
right,
that one hears in different times.
Yeah, you know, I forgot about the seriousness of, you know, diluting these things. And yeah, I didn't even think, I just thought it was unbelievable that even he included it in the Chanukah message. But you're right, there's even greater significance to it. By the way, I do want to remind our audience that on Tuesday, December the 10th, the Five Synagogues of White Plains Israel Action Committee and the Westchester Jewish Council presents the Challenges of Israel and American Jewry Today, a nuclear Iran, the Palestinians, and the Arab Winter. That's Tuesday, December 10th at 7:30 p.m. If you are in that area, make sure to circle your calendar for December 10th, because it will be a conversation with Malcolm Honlein, moderated by Dr. Eric Mandel. It's going to be at Temple Israel Center on Old Maranek Road up in White Plains. And for information, you could go to their website or dial 914-948-2800. So we're not the only ones who are begging you to share your opinions regarding Iran and all that. And obviously all the other events that we find out about, we will tell everybody about. And we will get to Malcolm's Chanukah message coming up before we wrap up this morning. So don't worry about that, folks. He always has a very important message on Erev Shabbos Chanukah. But of course, we begin with what's been going on over the last many days, really since we last spoke. We left the air last week wondering if there'd be a deal. And then, of course, over the weekend, we found out what type of deal there is. And we need some details from you, Mr. Honlein. But here's how I want to begin, because before this deal became official, which, of course, was Saturday night, Sunday morning, depending where in the world you are, before it became official, the New York Times, and I apologize to all those who refer to it as the New York Slimes and really hate the fact that I'm quoting them so often in recent weeks, but they're an important benchmark when it comes to how the media covers things out there. The New York Times on Saturday morning of last week had an opening paragraph analyzing the situation regarding the P5 plus one and the negotiations in Geneva with Iran. And these were the couple of sentences that were used in the opening paragraph of the top story of the paper to explain what the offer was to Iran and why they would go for this deal and why it's so beneficial to everybody who's involved to go ahead with this deal. And Malcolm, if you just listen to what I have to say, if there's any way you could at least explain this to me, what the thinking is behind those who are behind these negotiations. The Times writes, in its delicate negotiations with Iran over freezing its nuclear program, the Obama administration is gambling that the gradual relaxation of punishing sanctions will whet Tehran's appetite for greater economic relief, inducing the country's leaders to negotiate a further deal to roll back its nuclear progress. Now, usually one thinks that you have to be tougher in order to get what you want. Here, they're easing up in order to whet the appetite of the other side to eventually get what they want. Does this arrangement, does this philosophy, does this strategy make sense?
It makes sense that, you know, it's such a complicated process, and we only are learning now the superficial aspects. We haven't yet gotten to the guts of it, and that was reflected in the report that we heard read, where the Zarif, the foreign minister, as he arrived back, started saying, well, what the Americans have put up is not true. What the Americans are saying, about the deal isn't true. And there were other accusations, you know, about the sides lying and then reinterpreting already what they say and what they commit to and how they declared it a victory, and that this is, you know, absolutely typical of the Iranian negotiating style of how they will put up a public front and then behind the scenes will be already conspiring on how to avoid and to bypass any of the restrictions and the current agreement. But the problem is that when one goes back and looks at the actual document, I think the Iranian interpretation looks more correct than the one that was publicly announced and the talking points that were posted by the State Department.
Right. That's why I'm asking more from the United States point of view, not from the Iran point of view. Does it make sense? Is it logical? I read this over and over trying to figure out, is it logical that one can whet the appetite of the other side that wants to destroy you, that to reduce their economic sanctions, to get their economy to prosper, and therefore follow the Talmudic logic, they're going to go ahead and make an even better deal that the U.S. would be satisfied with?
Yes, but understand that they will make a deal on paper.
Right.
It doesn't mean that that's going to be the reality. And the logic, again, we approach this with Western minds that think about things in every aspect differently. And you said the Hanukkah message, you know, when you talk about time, their sense of time is very different than ours. They will wait. They have patience. They say if it takes 1,000 years, they can wait. They don't mean it, but they're willing to bypass an immediate benefit. We want everything now. We want everything immediately. We have no patience for things lasting 8 days. Nobody has time for 8 days right now. And for the Iranians, they look at this deal and they say, we need relief from the sanctions. They don't pay a price in this deal. They don't have to dismantle one centrifuge. They don't have to deal with the issue of weaponization and missile delivery, so they can go ahead with that. They can continue research and development. They can do things in secret locations that we may not know. The deal itself doesn't go into effect for probably 6 weeks, I would say. So the understanding that everybody had that it's already begun, that 6 months have begun, is not so. First, the IEA has to check that the Iranians are complying, which is good. But on the other hand, there are a lot of details that have yet to be worked out. And what's important, again, is to look at it from their perspective. Your question is it really goes to the heart of a lot of what we're dealing with right now. When the Zarif, the foreign minister who negotiated this, said that the text twice explicitly says that Iran will have an enrichment program, that it will continue and be part of any agreement now or in the future. Now, when the Canadian government comes out and is deeply skeptical and they say, we're not going to give up on the sanctions because this deal does not offer the kind of assurances that we want, there are many aspects. It's every sentence has to be parsed, and we've been trying to go through it to look at this versus what was put out in the talking points, so that the Arak plutonium reactor is in fact a dangerous place and will continue to be a dangerous place. And they said, well, they can only build roads, we were told, and nothing else. Now we're told they can put on roofs, they can do other things, building the walls, they just can't put the inside in. And if anything, they have to build a light water reactor, which in the end they may be willing to do because they can produce enough uranium and don't need the plutonium for a bomb. Or on the other hand, they will just keep the facility there and be able to convert it whenever as they want. So we have to see what the final outcome is. And the U.S. Secretary Kerry says, look, this is a first phase test. We will see if they live up to commitments, that everything we've done is reversible. But once you start breaking the psychological, let alone the economic restrictions of sanctions, once you have a situation like the auto show where nobody had signed up in Tehran, and now all of a sudden everybody's there because that's one of the things that's exempted,
well,
you already see the change that's taking place, and that's hard to turn around. And you look at what's happening in the region, not only do you see the Sunni-Shiite divide, which I've constantly pointed out is really at the heart of much of what is happening.
Right.
But the steps that they will take will also be different. You can't go back.
That same article, and it's funny you say the word psychological, because it says in that same article, by changing the psychology around the world, the opponents to the plan argue that the roughly $100 billion in remaining sanctions will gradually be whittled away. That's why many people don't understand historically the significance of what the P5 plus one did last weekend, because they've taken a situation where essentially there were no formal, really any type of fruitful negotiations between between Iran and the Western world for the last, what, 30 plus years? And they've completely changed the whole dynamic of it.
There have been negotiations, if you remember, almost all the time, some of it clandestine, as we learned, and some of it more open. But we had negotiations where Rouhani, the new president, who everybody's touting, was the negotiator, and he wrote a book telling how he lied and obfuscated. During those negotiations, which went on for many years with the European three, representing the Western powers, came to nothing.
So, well, how would you put it? Not negotiation, but we never had a formal agreement? Is that what you would say?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. But and to go to the point of it, if you read what Khamenei has said, and that is, don't be fooled by your smiling partners, by the smile of the people you negotiate with. And that's exactly what's happening to us. Right. That Zarif puts on a smile, Rouhani, when we forget all of his history. It covers over, and honest thing is delivered, but that's the net result. And you end up with a situation where we have legitimized a regime that has executed hundreds of people since Rouhani came into power, continues all of their terrorism support, expands their role in Syria, and I would bet that they earn themselves through this either by agreement or by fact a seat at the Syrian negotiations. We learn about all the secret talks that took place that people did not know about, that went on for months, and that Israel found out about through their own sources, as did Great Britain or France, actually, even earlier. And I had heard about it, and I asked whether there were talks. Unfortunately, I used a specific name, I guess, and that they could say no to that, but not to the real reality.
Is that something that you would not have told us about that, correct? Even if you were told, you would not have told us about that.
Right.
Okay. Breaking news overnight, this nuclear facility in Iran that suffered the damage of an earthquake and 8 people were killed plus many injured, is that the main facility in Iran?
That was, well, first of all, there are 3 facilities that we deal with. Natanz and Fordo are 2, plus Iraq, which is the plutonium. Plus, there are other facilities, I believe. And so they have everything redundant. One of the things they learned is that from
multiple locations.
Pardon me?
Multiple locations.
Multiple locations, back up. So you got 20,000 centrifuges in place. They can continue to enrich no matter what. And they will just keep these centrifuges spinning. And under the agreement, by the way, they're now allowed to put in new ones, but they are allowed to replace any that burn out.
So
cutting the number, there is a limitation, but the fact is that the stockpile is not supposed to be increased.
There are loopholes everywhere.
And maybe during the 6 weeks they can increase.
Right.
When does the measure of the stockpile that can't be surpassed begin?
Right.
And if you look at what they say the agreement, and if you look at the actual text, it says on the 20% uranium that some of it will be destroyed, but gotten rid of, and some of it will be converted into gas, which, by the way, can be reverted back to its dangerous form.
So the one that did get hit with the earthquake, you would say it was one of the significant facilities in Iran.
Yeah, absolutely.
America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard and listeners sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, Rockland County at 91.9 in the FM dial, around the world on the web, jmnam.org. Malcolm Honlein is with us. Weekly update here on this Chavtet B'November, significant date in Jewish history. If you don't know why, ask your teacher today or research it yourself. And if need be, I'll announce it before the end of the show, but it is the 29th of November, what they refer to in Israel as Chavtet B'November. Speaking of Israel, by the way, and it was quite a news week, so much of it dominated by the passing of Arik Einstein, who we know is a significant figure in Israeli history. I'm wondering if that distracted Israel from what was going on with these negotiations with Iran. It certainly didn't distract Prime Minister Netanyahu, who came out with some very strong statements in reacting to the deal. He called it a historic mistake. And you know what people asked me this week? It's funny because knowing you'd be on, of course, and I know what people's intentions are with this, but they're so curious if any other U.S. administration, in your opinion, would have been behind this deal. If a Secretary of State from another president would have been behind this deal, I don't know if you're even comfortable answering that in any type of definitive manner. But the reaction of the Prime Minister was very interesting. In fact, we have a report here. This came from a member of Knesset who, of course, remained anonymous. The Prime Minister made it clear to the most powerful man on earth that if he intends to stay the most powerful man on earth, it's important to make a change in American policy, because the practical result of his current policy is liable to lead him to the same failure that the Americans absorbed in North Korea and Pakistan, and Iran could be next in line. That was the message conveyed by Prime Minister Netanyahu to President Obama in a private telephone call Sunday to discuss the interim deal on Iran's nuclear program. Senior Israeli lawmaker in Netanyahu's coalition said this to the Jerusalem Post. Do you think, Malcolm, that it was this harsh and Netanyahu really let the president have it?
Well, I wasn't on the call, and I don't think this the official you referred to was on the call. He was, I think, conveying the essence of what had been said, if the exact words have been used. There have been harsh exchanges over the last couple of weeks. By the way, the same kind of sentiment was expressed by Arab leaders in the last few days about America's role in the Middle East and what the future role will be.
Specifically, Saudi Arabian Arab leaders?
That kind of Arab leader. But look, they've been saying a lot of things, both privately and publicly and privately, even though some of them have come out subsequently with a more moderate approach, let's say, to the deal, a very skeptical but somewhat supportive after numerous conversations. But I know in private and in reality, they're all looking to make sure that they're not going to be left behind and are working on their own nuclear deal. So I think what the message here is that you have to look at this long term, that while you may feel that you accomplished something with a short-term deal, and it may have, it certainly keeps them at where they are right now. At most, maybe it puts the breakout point a month or 2 months by most estimates back, but not more than that. So Iran is not many months away from having a bomb. So there you can sit back at this point and say, okay, you know, we can get relief from the sanctions, which is the most important thing, and the pressure from internal, the population has been demanding of them, and still not have to sacrifice that they can come out and say, we are a nuclear power, guys, we're there, this is a recognition of it, we haven't lived up to any of the conditions of the Security Council resolutions, like dismantling all of their centrifuges, getting rid of all of their stockpiles, and then negotiating where they can get it from, what kind of facilities can exist. Here, it's a recognition of the reality of what is and probably what will be.
Right. A moment ago, you mentioned how certain Arab countries are reacting in an almost similar way to however Prime Minister Netanyahu, you know, exactly reacted to the President of the United States. Is Israel now going to get into a very, I don't know, historically unusual alliance with certain countries that they've never had common ground with before, specifically to figure out how to deal with Iran?
I would not exaggerate it, although obviously it's significant. I've talked about it. I think that this is a temporary alliance. They have seen increasingly, and especially with the Sunni-Shiite divide, that have seen that Israel is an ally in this, and that Israel is the source of stability in the region, et cetera, and that, Prince Alawi, not always reputed to be a great friend of ours, said that Israel is not the problem. Iran is the problem and the danger in the region. There's all sorts of reports of clandestine exchanges and visits and talks about Air Force bases. I would take some of that with a grain of salt, not to jump on all over it. But the fact is that there is, in view of not only this, but also the changes in the region, reevaluation on the part of many of them, and I've heard it directly from leaders of countries in the Middle East who talk about Israel as being the only hope against Iran. And
right.
many of them feel, by the way, that they're far more vulnerable to Iran than Israel is.
The question is, if the United States would not cooperate with what Israel feels must be, you know, inevitable action they have to take against Iran, would it be possible to form an alliance with neighboring countries that would shore up Israel's ability to go and militarily do what they need to do in Iran?
I would say it's possible that there will be cooperation, but clandestine. You won't see countries getting up at the United Nations and applauding Israel's membership, and dropping
sure.
their opposition and putting on the show. But we know that even on the Palestinian issue, that privately what they say is not what they say publicly, but they have to, you know, they do what they have to do. And that's been traditionally the approach to international affairs.
By the way, I'm at a dinner this past Sunday night, a prominent American Orthodox rabbi. And I wouldn't bring it up if it wasn't from a source like this. A prominent American Orthodox with great ties to the administration in Israel says to me that Bibi is behind this deal. Is it possible that Prime Minister Netanyahu, because of the long term, was encouraging this type of arrangement with Iran?
No.
Why would someone say that? Why would they ruin their credibility and say something like that?
Well, I think that, I mean, I've seen this theory postulated before, but it's this is not the deal. If he was going to accept something, this isn't it. And the, you know, the idea that this is good cop, bad cop, and the way to get the Iranians
right.
to agree to it was if Israel opposes it. If Israel supported it, of course, they would never sign on to it. But I think that goes a couple steps too far. The reality on the ground is what we have to keep watching, and we have to use these next 6 months to make sure what the outcome will be. You know, there are a lot of shifting sands right now. The opposition within Iran, instead of coming from the people who are celebrating this deal because they think it's going to bring them relief, they'll be, I think, a little bit surprised when they find out that the sanctions remain in place and only in certain areas were they removed, so the economic impact on the people will continue. Khamenei doesn't worry about it because he has his own real estate empire worth $95 billion that he stole from the people. So the opposition is coming now from the Iran Revolutionary Guard, and reports that they want to take steps to, you know, overthrow the regime. We'll see what happens on other fronts that will impact what Iran's position will be.
If you don't mind reiterating, because I'm not sure I understood, so the Iranian people will likely not feel the impact of the easing of these sanctions.
Not broadly. When you have 30% unemployment, they will in the petrochemical and auto industries.
Why? The price of oil is going to go up or down?
Oil will stay more or less the same because Iran wasn't that big a factor. But because the sanctions on petrochemicals, sales of petrochemicals, gold refining, and the sale of gold, what was the third thing? Oh, auto kits that for the auto industry. Those are the sanctions that were relieved, as well as some several billion dollars in frozen funds that will be released. Although during this time, the sanctions will still deprive Iran of a much larger amount of money. But in terms of jobs, it will begin and it will bring in, as we noted with all the auto companies, the oil companies are back there negotiating. It will bring jobs to partial part of the population, but the others, the banking and other restrictions, still remain in place, including the cap on their oil exports.
You know, there's a rumor that the United States and Hezbollah are now in negotiations?
Through London, there is such a report.
And that would be a first in terms of the West sitting down with Hezbollah or not?
I think that there are all the time things going on. I would not be surprised if it were true that there were some talks because of the Syrian situation, and they know that in order to get a deal in Syria, which is a major target, you know, they have the conference coming up, it would involve having to have Hezbollah go along. But Hezbollah is not a free agent. Hezbollah is a tool of Iran. So, again, there are a lot of these reports. We're going to see more and more of it. Some of them will be true.
I see a report now. Iran sees implementation of nuclear deals starting by early January. And I'm sure by the time we get there, it'll be early February.
Well, and the question is, what happens in the 6 months? What if they don't make a deal? Does it get extended another 6 months? That's another point Netanyahu said, that it, you know, you really have to come to hard lines. And, you know, Kerry is going to the Middle East this week, this coming week. The idea is that, and the president said that they would consult with Saudi Arabia and Israel, et cetera, to talk about what has to be included in the final agreement, that this is only a first step, and that it's gotten them to the point where they're negotiating an agreement. And if people feel the benefit of the release of some of these restrictions, that they're going to demand more. That's some of the thinking. But the truth is that the decision's not the people's. The decision is the government's. Now we'll see. Will they really cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency? Will they? How many times do we catch them cheating? And will we just dismiss these things as minor violations, so we don't understand that this is part of the modus operandi, and that this is all a setup because they're going to emerge from this declaring that they are a nuclear power? This is North Korea. This is the experience we've had with them all along, and I think that we have to monitor every single aspect of this, be skeptical of anything they say, or disbelieve everything they say, and let them prove it. It was interesting that while the same day that this was going on, that 60 planes were in Israel from Greece and Italy and the United States doing joint maneuvers, an operation called Blue Flag. And the report is that there's going to be very extensive U.S.-Israeli war games the day after the deal is signed. I again, would not yet bet that was the case.
I don't know if I should hope that there would be or would not be.
Listen, it's going on all the time. U.S.-Israel military cooperation is actually very good. Everybody extols it. They all talk about it.
So then the United States administration can never dismiss the possibility of cooperating with Israel in an action in the Middle East. They can never take it completely off the table.
Well, if you look, the chief of staff, Dempsey, said that if Israel takes action, we will live up to our obligations. But at the same time, we see many reports that the prime minister has been pressed by the president, and it's going to be very hard while the negotiations are going on to carry out an attack unless some specific revelation, you know, comes back. And they will do show things. They'll invite IEA inspectors to look at things, and they will highlight all this stuff. But it doesn't mean anything in the end, unless the permanent agreement is such that it really has such safeguards. You cannot open any door that Iran won't just march through. And its legitimacy has already been restored in the international community. You will see Iran playing much more of a role, and that they rightly claim that their isolation has ended, that they are now back in the middle of the international community.
You know what it reminds me of when you talk about the IEA visiting? I hate to say it, and it's a chilling example, but a reminder of the Red Cross visiting the camps during World War II, right? Mm-hmm. When they were invited into
to see the show places.
Yeah.
The propaganda films about how wonderful life was. How come nobody talks about the executions? How many nobody is tying this to the terrorism network? And what does the deal have to do to end that? Again, you know, just read what Khamenei says. Do not trust the enemy who smiles at you. They learned the lesson. They're doing it.
All we got to do is listen to him.
And listen, but that's the point. It's exactly right, Nachum. And how many times do we say you got to listen to what these guys say? They tell you what they're going to do. Look, read the words of the head of this parliamentary committee. If you read the repudiation, really, of the deal, in essence, that this guy, and it's online and people can read it, and I'll take the time now to go through it in detail, but it's amazing because he says, look, you know, don't be fooled by this deal. He's talking to the Iranian people, but it's also a message to the West. And we just constantly don't take these things seriously enough. They tell us what they're going to do.
No question about it. By the way, did any reaction surprise you in the aftermath of the deal last weekend? Obviously, BB, you know, that's not a surprise. Some of the Arab states you mentioned, but any member of the Obama administration, a congressional member, a prime minister or president of another country, anything surprise you, or were you happy with anyone's specific reaction to the deal?
Well, I think Senator Schumer and some other members of the Senate came out appropriately skeptical and saying that they believe that we have to move ahead with the legislation, angered by part of it, especially finding out about the secret negotiations, which Congress was not informed about. I don't know what the course of the legislation will be. It is likely, I think, that we may end up with a bill that will say that it goes into effect in 6 months, and it would take time anyway to be able to implement it. And if at the end of 6 months the Iranians have actually by some miracle complied and lived up to their agreement, then the sanctions at least serve as a pressure point and get them to understand that non-compliance will come with a very heavy price for them. Right now, all they see is that they've gained without having to make any concessions, and that is certainly the wrong message for these guys. And when they talk about, you know, the continuing construction, they talk about how they have essentially are sticking it to the West in this regard. But again, look at what the chairman of the Parliamentary Committee on Foreign Policy and National Security. We have emerged victorious heroes over the West. That's the message that they're giving to their people. That's the message they send to every terrorist entity, that you can overcome to it. You can overcome. Just be smart. And the West is very gullible. Unfortunately, we are. And these guys have been bazaaris for 2,000, 3,000 years. They are so good at it, and they know how to manipulate the situation and manipulate their interlocutors. So, again, I'm not saying that the people are all naive and people don't understand what this is all about, but read how they view it. Read how they see the situation as a guideline for what we have to do.
Do you want to?
And the cost all over the Middle East. Look at the rise of terrorism now in the West Bank. We've seen that. And other things that are all part of this climate of permissiveness that will be inspired. Why would Hamas not read Hezbollah not read into this, and Hamas not read into this, that again you can get away with everything if you're smart?
Do you want to see the rhetoric on the pro-Israel street tempered a bit? Do you not like to hear people run around saying how President Obama has sold Israel down the river? Is there a different way to put that, or that doesn't bother you so much?
No, it does bother me. Not so much the messages. The words do matter. The American people don't want to see their president, even if they don't like him and don't trust him, as the majority don't right now. But they don't want their president this abroad. They can do it here at home very well.
Right.
I will tell you that we also have to remember, first of all, they're going to be in power for 3 more years. Second, the United States and Israel need each other on many other grounds. We just saw this week the UN passed 6 anti-Israel resolutions, and that the continued campaign against Israel, and the U.S. is one of few, not sometimes the only ally who really stands with Israel in this time. And it's unbelievable that one of the resolutions condemns Israel's treatment of the Syrian people. Here they make have 3 million refugees, 1 million children amongst them, 11,000 children killed. And they're talking about Israel's treatment while Israel's hospitals are treating the Syrians who are escaping the massacre in Syria. Just to highlight the irrationality of these resolutions. But so we shouldn't, think that we can break all ties and we can just dismiss everybody and that there's no consequence for it. I think that when you have such an important issue, it's got to be stated clearly. It's got to be confronted. We learned the lessons from the past that you don't dismiss it, and whatever the price ultimately will be, we have to do what we need to do. But the question is how you phrase it, how you deal with it. Don't think you can burn every bridge right away. This is a long-term battle. This is not that we are engaged in. This is not going to go away. This is a fight for the next 6 months or 8 months for the first phase and then for the second phase. And if the United States is not taking the lead, and if the United States won't fight on these issues, believe me, the Europeans won't be there.
And who knows for how long after that, after the 6 months and the year.
This is a long-term struggle. And again, I would say we should remember that it's not just for Israel. I want to see the Arab leaders out there more. I want to see where's everybody else who's going to be endangered. All the Muslim countries of Central Asia, the Europeans who are going to face the Iran's nuclear umbrella before we will. I want to see where are all these people when it comes to speaking out. They're right, the Iranians, that they made cosmetic concessions and that they continue to preserve their primary goal. We have to make sure that is not the case. We cannot emerge from this with Iran having the nuclear capacity intact. You know, we embolden everybody to challenge us. Look what the Chinese are doing over their airspace. Mm-hmm. So many things that remind us of the need to be consistent and stand up, and nobody should be able to misunderstand the message that we send on this.
All right, very quick Hanukkah message. I don't usually steer your holiday message, Malcolm, but today I just feel the need to. We focus so much on the miracle of the oil, the military victory, and so many other important aspects of the holiday. Sometimes we forget that probably the most, if not one of the most, important aspect of the holiday is that Jewish sovereignty and rule over the land of Israel continued for quite a while after the victory. And I think it's an important message for people to remember this Hanukkah.
And that it was the result of the few, that when people get depressed and say, look, the whole world's against us, first of all, that's not true. Second of all, we have a miraculous situation. We have an independent Jewish state that is a world power, that was Netanyahu who drove this. Can you imagine if he weren't there fighting on the front line? This issue would never have been engaged in the way it is.
That's right.
We would have seen a very different outcome. And while people sometimes are uncomfortable with what he says, believe me, I can tell you the flip side of it is that without his strong stand, this outcome would have been very different. And I think he drove the negotiations, at least them to hold back. And the threat of an Israeli strike is what is driving the process, as much as the sanctions is what drove Iran to the table. And I know that people get depressed when they hear that we didn't even talk about some of the increase in the violence in Yudan Shomron and the presence of the Salafi jihadi groups and some of the other things that are taking place. But if you look overall, Israel's situation today, their National Security Council's annual assessment shows that it's better than it was, that the number of threats are more limited. Sure, Hezbollah remains a threat to Hamas and these things, but overall, there's no existential threat to Israel. There's no Jewish community not free to leave the country in which it lives for the first time in, I don't know, 2,000 years. The situation of Jews is really robbing the Admatim. That is the key, that Jews never did it because we had the majority of people behind us. We never won because of our own power, though we have to have it. But the essence is that we take the right course. It's rabim biat maatim, tamein biat tahorim, rishon biat tzadikim. If we do the right thing, that we do it in honest and direct ways, and that we remember our responsibilities and have a clear vision of it, and God plays his role, the miracles continue to happen. We just don't take time to recognize them and to celebrate them. It's time that the miracles of those days are happening in our times. We just have to prove ourselves worthy of them and show that we appreciate them.
Phenomenal. Happy Hanukkah, and we'll speak again next week.
God willing.
Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. We are here next week. There will be a weekly update next Friday. It's two Fridays from now that I will be off, but we will be here next week. And then after that break in 2 weeks, we'll pick things up again. Weekly update Friday morning, 7:40 Eastern Time on the stream at jmnam.org. And, of course, on our stations at our home bases at 91.1 FM, 90.1 FM in the Catskills, and in Rockland County at 91.9 on the FM dial.